We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. On July 28, 2013, 50-year-old Robert Hoagie Hoagland got up early to get bagels, stopped at the gas station, and had breakfast with his son Max, who was 23 at the time. He then paid some bills, played a little online Scrabble, and mowed the lawn. So you can't really have a more quintessential, dad Sunday than that. But Hoagie was never seen after that day.
And now, nearly 7.5 years later, the question remains, did this suburban Connecticut dad mow the lawn, gas up his wife's car, and just decide to start a new life? Or did his son Max and his drug use problems lead to a much darker fate for the family man? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Robert Hobie Hoagland. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. So this one I want to get into, but it's a weird one, you know, and I come into these usually having some sort of an opinion of as to what happened to the missing person because, you know, I've been researching it or whatever. And this one I'm really curious to get your perspective on because, like, I don't know. I have no idea what happened to this guy.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best.
Okay. Robert Hobie Hoagland was born on June 9, 1963. Hoagie always dreamed of becoming a chef, and he actually met his wife Lori in culinary school. The pair married and eventually had three sons, Chris, Max, and Sam. Now, in the beginning, you know, the young family moved around a lot as the couple tried to find jobs in their chosen industry. Hoagie worked at many restaurants over the years in varying capacities, but it doesn't sound like his dreams of culinary greatness ever really materialized, you know, the way he was hoping. For her part, Lori passed her love of cooking down to the next generation as a culinary arts teacher at Newtown High School, and that was in their hometown of Newtown, Connecticut. The family settled in the Sandy Hook area of Newtown to have a quiet, friendly place to raise their family. And, you know, for many years, it was exactly that. But on December 14th, 2012, tragedy struck their idyllic town when a gunman walked into Sandy Hook Elementary School and murdered 26 people, including 20 children aged 6 to 7.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was the same Sandy Hook.
Yeah, the tragedy rocked the entire nation. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I remember exactly where I was when this happened.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, because our older boys, they were close in age to these kids. And I remember spending the entire day at work getting nothing done and just following the news coverage and then coming home and just sitting alone on the couch and just like crying and watching CNN.
Yeah, I think I was listening to the news in my car on the way home. And then when I made it to my apartment, I just sat in my car.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't get away from the news. I just couldn't do anything. It was terrible.
It was, I mean, just really just a truly awful day in our country's history. So this happened just 7 months before what we're talking about today in this episode. So, you know, the wounds are still very fresh. And from what I understand, Sandy Hook is a small, tight-knit community. So there's a pretty good chance that the Hoaglands knew either family members of the victims or even some of the victims themselves. You know, and I have to imagine that with such a personal connection to a horrible tragedy, they were grieving in some sense. But this wasn't the only thing the family had been dealing with. Their middle son, Max, had been using drugs, and it had gotten out of control. Dealing with a loved one who has a drug use problem is an ongoing heartbreak, and the Hoagland family certainly was not immune to this. Hoagie and Lori loved their son, and they tried to do everything they could to help him. Max did complete a stint in rehab and ended up moving in with his grandmother, but it just all became kind of too much for her. So in 2013, Max moved back in with his parents.
So grandma is in Sandy Hook or is...
I think nearby.
Nearby?
Yeah.
So that was probably his attempt at, you know, people, places, things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
While Lori had a stable job as a teacher, Hoagie still worked long restaurant hours. So when Max really started having problems, the family seemingly decided to just circle the wagons and really just focus on helping him out. Hoagie left the restaurant industry entirely and actually got licensed as a real estate appraiser and helped out at his friend's law office. And so this career change gave him the flexibility to spend more time with his family, including Max. But, you know, spending time with Max didn't just mean picking up bagels on the weekend. The same week Hoagie went missing, two laptops also went missing from their home. And, you know,
it's an indicator of selling property for drug money.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's a safe community. It's not a place where, like, you randomly get laptops stolen out of your house. So, of course, Hoagie figured that Max was somehow involved in this. And he suspected that they were either stolen by the shady people his son was hanging out with, or exactly what you said, that Max, you know,
hawked them for drug money. Yeah.
Exactly. Apparently, Hoagie knew where some of these people hung out, so he actually ended up going to an abandoned factory in nearby Bridgeport and confronted two men about these missing laptops. Mm. And, you know, they denied having anything to do with it. And we've talked in previous episodes about how any involvement with illegal drugs raises your chances of becoming a crime victim.
Yeah, absolutely.
In some regard, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that can also be said of someone who maybe isn't doing drugs himself, but is confronting people in abandoned warehouses.
Yeah. I mean, anybody that has a connection in some way
with
someone that uses drugs, you know, there is always a potential for crime.
Exactly. And so when Hoagie is reported missing just a few days after this, I think a lot of people thought that maybe he basically pissed off the wrong person and something happened to him. Hmm. And I think the drug angle is probably why this case got so much media attention in the beginning. You know, because as we know, police aren't typically inclined to really investigate missing persons cases when it's an adult, because there's always that chance that the person just took off.
Right.
And, you know, as we've discussed many times, like, that's not illegal. Like, you can just leave your life.
Yeah, it's a shitty thing to do, but you absolutely have the right to do that.
Yeah, and it's not the police department's problem, you know?
Right.
But in this case, like, yes, there was the drugs, but, you know, the fact that it was also such an ordinary day. In addition to the online Scrabble and the lawn mowing, Hoagie was making plans. So his wife, Lori, had been on vacation with friends in Turkey for the past 17 days, and he was supposed to pick her up from the airport when she returned on Monday, July 29th. Despite the fact that the couple spoke on the phone on Saturday night and confirmed these plans, when Lori arrived at JFK Airport in New York City, there was no one there to greet her.
Okay, so they spoke on Saturday.
Yeah, they spoke on Saturday night. She was coming in on Monday.
Okay, so Sunday...
Sunday was bagel day.
Okay.
So Sunday was the day that he had bagels with Max, he mowed the lawn, he, like, gassed up her car because she was coming home.
I'm just trying to get a timeline.
Yeah.
So Sunday, when was the last time anybody saw him?
So we're getting to that.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So we're getting to that. But it was Sunday, right? So it was Sunday afternoon when he was last seen. So wife spoke to him on Saturday. He was seen on Sunday. But then by Monday, nobody knew where he was. Monday, when Lori's at JFK, you know, she obviously tries calling her husband because maybe he, like, got the times mixed up or, you know,
Sure. Whatever.
But she never received an answer. So she eventually went to a family member's home in Brooklyn after waiting for, like, 2 hours at the airport, just to kind of, you know, get, because Brooklyn, so for those of you who are not familiar, like, JFK is in Queens. And so, like, Brooklyn is a short cab ride. So much easier than getting from JFK to Newtown, Connecticut. So anyway, so she went to Brooklyn, and while she was there at her family member's house, she, you know, obviously continued trying to reach out to Hoagie and figure out like what the hell is going on. But while she was there, she received a disturbing phone call. Hoagie's boss's wife, and remember, like, his, so this is at the law firm, and they were friends with, it was like their friend's law firm. Yeah. So that's, because it's like, why is your boss's wife, like, calling? But, you know, it's right. They're buddies.
Yeah.
So she calls to tell Lori that Hoagie didn't show up for work that day. Mm-hmm. And so she is presumably calling Lori because she obviously couldn't get in touch with him and is similarly wondering what's happening.
Does he have a cell phone or is all of this landlines?
No, cell phone. Okay. I mean, it was 2013.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know how some 50-year-olds are. Like,
No, he was like a normal one. He had a cell phone. So at this point, you know, all right, so Lori is in Brooklyn, husband hasn't picked her up, didn't show up for work. So she's obviously thinking that there is something wrong beyond him flaking on the time that she arrived. But, like, she's not in full-blown panic mode yet.
Okay.
You know, her flight didn't arrive until 4 p.m. on Monday, and she's probably exhausted. You know, coming from Turkey, that's like a long flight. So she ends up spending the night in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And then heads back home to Connecticut the next day, Tuesday, July 30th. But when she gets there, she finds no trace of either her husband or her son, Max. And on top of that, her car, a Volkswagen Golf, is gone. But Hoagie's car, which is a Mini Cooper, is sitting in the driveway. Yeah, so she gets home on Tuesday, no husband, no son, no car, but husband's car is there. And still can't get in touch with anyone.
No sign of forced entry or anything?
No, nothing like that. So she's obviously trying to figure out what's going on at this point. So, you know, she starts to look around the house, just like you said, to like see if there are any clues or anything, really. So she goes into her husband's office and finds his phone, keys, passport, and blood pressure medication all there. So in her eyes, this is what she's, you know, seeing right now. His wallet and his and her car were gone. So, you know, maybe he's somewhere short term, right? He doesn't have his blood pressure medication or his passport, but like, you know, there are plenty of places you can go without those two things. But you know, she couldn't find any clothes or anything else missing, so it doesn't look like he decided to, like,
spend the week somewhere else.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, so she's still kind of confused, but, like, yeah, just really can't get a handle on what's going on at this point. So while the whereabouts of her husband remained a mystery, Lori was at least able to quickly figure out where her son was. Bridgeport police contacted her and told her that Max had been arrested the night before. So Monday night. Yeah, he was arrested for trespassing near that old factory where his father confronted the men about the laptops. Police were patrolling that area because it's known for drugs and sex work. And Max, you know, admitted that he was there to buy drugs. But he said that he had permission to be driving the car he was in, his mother's Volkswagen Golf.
Okay. So now we have the son and the car.
Right.
Okay.
But still no Hoagie. But when police contacted Lori, she was like, no, actually, he does not have permission to be driving that car. And, you know, go to Bridgeport and buy drugs. Like, that's not actually something I allowed him to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, she let him kind of twist in the wind a little bit. And they held him on a $2,500 bond. Mm. But, you know, again, I'm sure, like, Lori couldn't even worry about that at the moment because she's obviously coming to the conclusion that if Max had her car in Bridgeport, that
where's Hoagie, then?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, he's not only gone, but he didn't have any of the vehicles.
Yeah, right. Or a cell phone. It's just him and his wallet missing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot more concerning to her, obviously, than like he took her car somewhere.
Right.
So at this point, it seems clear that we have an actual missing person. But what's still not clear is whether or not he's missing of his own volition. The police get involved, though, and start digging into his last known whereabouts. So as I mentioned at the top of the episode, on the morning of the 28th, Hoagie went to a gas station to fill up his wife's car. While he was there, he also bought a map of the eastern United States. Now, I know you're looking at me. So going back to like some 50-year-olds not having a cell phone, like he did have a cell phone. But according to an episode of Disappeared about this case, Hoagie was a map guy. So even though it was 2013 and GPSs were commonplace, as were like Google Maps on your phone or whatever, he didn't use them and like still liked to use paper maps whenever he needed directions. Which, have you, when's the last time you even saw one of those maps in a gas station? I can't even think of it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's been at least 10 years since I've seen a map.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. But yeah, 2013, the gas station by his house, like, still had them.
So we don't know why he bought the map.
Well,
you said he likes to use maps for directions.
Yeah, and it was of the eastern United States. They're in Connecticut, so they're in the eastern United States, right?
Right.
So to the Hoaglands, this actually did represent a significant clue.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hoagie had talked about taking Max away on a hike on the Appalachian Trail.
Okay.
Probably, you know, as a way to get him away from drugs and the people he's still hanging out with. And to possibly reconnect with a son that he, you know, felt was slipping away from him.
Sure, yeah.
So based on this, because of this map, you know, the Hoagland family connected with the National Park Service rangers about their missing family member. And so they put up flyers with this photo near their trail.
So they're thinking that he just spontaneously decided to go on a hike?
Kind of like maybe, yeah, basically that, you know, he was talking about taking Max to the Appalachian Trail. And so maybe he just spontaneously decided, you know what, maybe I just need to get away myself, right? Because, all right, so if you think about it from Lori's perspective, she's been gone for 17 days. I'm sure she heard about the whole laptop thing while she was gone, right?
Yeah.
She gets home, her son's arrested for buying drugs. So maybe shit was just going bad when she was gone. And maybe Hoagie was like, you know what? I need a break. Can't deal with this.
Sure.
I'm going to go hike.
But is their house anywhere close to a trail entrance? Because both of the cars were still at the house.
Well,
so
he
walked from his house to a trail somewhere.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, they didn't think they like cracked the case.
Yeah. I know.
It's just all they had really at that point to go on.
Right. Yeah. I get that. It's just that just doesn't add up to me.
No.
That he would walk to a trail unless the trail is close to the house.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. And they don't say anything about that. That's kind of what they were clinging to, though, right? Because, like, that's at least
something, yeah.
Right, and it's a good resolution
right.
to the mystery, if that's what it is.
Maybe he's lost on the trail somewhere.
Yeah, or not lost, just on the trail somewhere, just, like, hanging out and getting away from his life for a little while.
But was there evidence that that he had, like, taken a pack, up some clothes?
Nothing like that.
Camping supplies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, they're clinging to hope.
Exactly.
I get it. But.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and so in the early days, like, that's what Lori wanted to believe, that there was a good chance her husband just decided to take a little time away.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, police continued to investigate all avenues. Because if Hoagie didn't leave on his own, it would stand to reason that his disappearance had some sort of connection to Max. When the police interviewed him, Max did admit to stealing the laptops to sell for drug money.
Okay.
Authorities were also able to track down the two men that Hoagie had confronted and interview them as well. But after speaking with them, police determined that the men had nothing to do with Hoagie's disappearance.
Hmm. Presumably they alibied themselves somehow.
Yeah. I mean, the police didn't
Yeah, they're not going to release that.
Details about why. But yeah, they said that, like, they don't think that those two men, regardless, you know, despite the fact that Hoagie had that interaction with them, you know, less than a week before he disappeared, they just, they don't think that they had anything to do with it.
Mm.
As for Max, he says that the last time he saw his father was on the morning of the 28th after breakfast. Hoagie was out mowing the lawn, and Max came out to take the Golf, his mom's car. He told his dad that he'd be back in a few hours. This interaction was confirmed by a neighbor who saw the pair talking and then witnessed Max driving away in his mother's car while Hoagie was mowing the lawn.
And this is in the morning on Sunday.
It's like late morning, early afternoon kind of time. Police gave Max a polygraph, and the FBI even performed a statement analysis. And both indicated that Max had no knowledge of his father's whereabouts. And this was further bolstered by a forensic search of the Volkswagen that he had been driving, which turned up clean. And you can understand why they're looking so closely at Max, right? I mean, because,
it's
not just his associates. Like, family members have been known.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, Max is a drug user. We don't know what specific drug was his preference. I mean, who knows? So that's the first avenue to explore.
Well, yeah. And it has to be, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's involved in shady things. He's admitted to stealing.
And it seems like he was the last person to see his father alive.
Right.
So, well, last person to see his father.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So they have to look at him. But again, like, nothing turned up.
Hmm.
And if something did happen, you would think that they would have turned up some sort of physical evidence in the car.
Right.
But no, nothing. And obviously there wasn't any indication of violence or anything in the house or around the house. And the neighbors saw him leave and Hoagie was still there. And, you know, so there's a lot of evidence pointing away from Max having anything to do with this.
Right.
So while her son was cleared in her husband's disappearance, which, you know, I'm sure she was obviously very happy about, Lori would soon make a discovery that made her heart sink. About 10 days after Hoagie was last seen, Lori found her husband's wallet and his car keys hidden underneath a doll in their bedroom.
Interesting.
Yeah. This means that when he left, he had nothing with him. No car, no wallet, no passport, no clothes, and no medication.
Hmm.
Yeah. Although he had withdrawn an unaccounted for $600 on July 25th, there was no evidence that he was using any credit cards or other funds since he was last seen on July 28th. So, you know, we do have a missing $600, an unaccounted for $600. But, I mean, that's not a lot of money to start a new life with.
No, and even if you are starting a new life, the blood pressure medication?
Yeah.
I feel like you'd probably take that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's one thing to leave your wallet and car keys and go walk about or whatever, but blood pressure medication, like, that's outside of a new life. You still need that.
Right, exactly.
So I feel like if this was something that he had planned, he still would have taken that.
Mm-hmm. But what's really disturbing, I think, is the fact that his wallet was hidden.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I mean, that to me really indicates that, like, I mean, one, obviously he didn't want the wallet to be found, but, like, so does that mean that he didn't want people to know that he didn't have anything with him? Like, why do you hide the wallet like that?
I don't know.
But, yeah, and it was, like, under this, like, weird doll in their room that I guess is just, like, some decorative thing that they never did anything with because she didn't find it for 10 days. And, obviously, you know, I would assume that she'd been kind of, like, tearing the place apart a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's
So like, that's not something that just accidentally gets left there. Like, it gets right. put there for a reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was my thought, was, is this someplace where they never touch, they never go over to?
No. But
yeah, I mean, it sounds like if she didn't find it for 10 days, then yeah, it's, I guess it's an area or a piece of furniture or something that they just don't use. So it wouldn't make sense for his wallet and keys to be there.
Right.
I don't understand why anybody would hide. What would be the point of hiding those?
Yeah, I don't know.
Whether it's him or somebody else.
Or somebody else, right. I mean, maybe.
Unless there was some sort of evidence there that they didn't want to be found.
Maybe, no.
Maybe fingerprints on the wallet from taking the $600.
Yeah, no, it doesn't say, it doesn't sound like anything, mm-hmm. you know, about the wallet itself was suspicious, just the fact that it was there.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I can think of is really, you know, wanting to maintain the idea that he had gone somewhere and was going to be back, right? Or like gone somewhere short term, you know, but if you don't have the wallet, it's more alarming. So maybe it was just like to either one, hide what had happened to him, or give him a head start by not alarming people that much.
Or maybe Max took the $600 out of the wallet to use for drug money.
And then hid the wallet?
Yeah, so that it gave him a little bit of time before his dad found out that the money was gone.
Oh, yeah, maybe. So you're thinking that Max, that this is like not necessarily even connected to the disappearance,
no.
that maybe Max hid the wallet so that Hoagie was thinking he just lost his wallet.
Right, to give him enough time to go out and score drugs.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, that this could just be completely unrelated to the disappearance and could just be related to, you know, all the previous drama.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Just a theory.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, so police continued to investigate, but at this point they didn't really know what they were investigating. You know, was it an abduction, a suicide, a guy who just left? Like, they didn't know. So they turned to his computers in search of answers. When they searched Hoagie's work computer, you know, they didn't find much out of the ordinary, but they did find that he had searched for an address in Rhode Island multiple times. That's like kind of weird, but he was a real estate appraiser, but it's a different state.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Is he licensed to do that in Rhode Island?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's somewhat, in, like, not the weirdest thing in the world. Because, you know, I'm a realtor and I have, like, strange, you know, addresses and stuff that I look up that have nothing to do with my actual business all the time, right?
Anything I should be worried about then?
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, so police look into this address, but, like, they couldn't find any connection between it and Hoagie.
So not through work or anything?
No. It could have just been like a house he thought was interesting. You know, it could have just been something completely benign.
Mm-hmm.
So authorities then tried to do a similar search on his home computer, obviously, because I would assume they'd think they'd find more interesting information.
Sure, maybe some leads to...
Yeah, like where he was going, what he was planning.
Or what that house, if there's a connection to that house that he was looking up or anything.
Yeah, anything. But about a month before his disappearance, Hoagie or someone had installed a program that deleted all searches and results.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So at this point in the story, I want to pause and see like where you think we are. You know, personally, like we said, I'm always a little wary of the he took nothing with him and abandoned his life narrative.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like as soon as there's a whiff of drugs, people also seem to jump right into a Scorsese movie. So all right, what are your thoughts at this point?
I don't know, honestly.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Did Max have a computer?
Well, no. There were those two laptops that he stole, but
right.
I don't know, like, if one of them, like, I don't know.
If one of them was his
I guess he wouldn't have stolen it if it was. So I don't think he had it. I think it was all kind of his parents.
I'm just curious as to who would install a program like that on a computer. If Max is even halfway with it, mm-hmm. he could figure out how to delete browser histories and right. clear your cache without downloading a program. That seems like something that an older person who doesn't know how to do that or isn't very computer savvy may do.
Yeah, and so it's interesting because if you look at it in terms of the disappearance, you could think, like, he's planning something. Hoagie is, right? Yeah. Like, he's planning on walking away. He's planning on starting a new life. And he doesn't
want to be found.
Right. He doesn't want to leave clues.
Right.
So you can look at it from that perspective. Or you can look at it like he's a 50-year-old dude who doesn't want his wife seeing what kind of porn he's looking at.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't thinking that. But, yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be something completely unrelated, you know?
Yeah. And relatively innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's tough for me because it's like, you know, in that episode of Disappeared, it's treated as this like crazy, suspicious like thing. But I mean, yeah, it could just be porn.
Yeah. I'm assuming they don't say specifically what the program is because it could be like an antivirus program. I know a lot of those do that too.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
yeah, they don't get into it. Just that, like, basically, it was frustrating for police because they couldn't get any clues.
Yeah,
because there's just really nothing to look for. As hard as it is for me to buy that someone would leave all of their money and start a new life without so much as their blood pressure medication.
That's what keeps hanging me up on it. That he didn't leave.
Yeah.
Because you know that's. Blood pressure medication can be life and death.
Well, it can be, but think of it this way. It's blood pressure medication. It's not like Oxy, right? So maybe he just got more from his doctor. Like, I think they're pretty, you know, like, hey, I lost my medicine. I lost my bottle. Like, I did this. I need more, whatever. I don't think they're going to, like, ask too many questions or give you too much of a hard time.
Yeah.
So maybe he just didn't take that bottle, but maybe he still had some.
All right.
You know? I have no idea. Like,
yeah.
There's no evidence that he did that whatsoever. I want to be clear. But I'm just saying, like, blood pressure medication, like, I don't think it's very hard to get.
Sure. It just doesn't make sense. Like, why wouldn't you just take it with you?
Right. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, like,
instead of going through the trouble of contacting your doctor, or if you're starting a new life, finding a new doctor.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it, to me, even if you're leaving, just blood pressure medication, like, that's a pill that you take every day.
Yeah.
You know?
But again, like, maybe he just, if he really doesn't want to be found, you know, maybe he just doesn't want to give any indication to his family that he left on his own accord. You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
And something that we need to mention is that this whole walking away from his life thing isn't exactly unprecedented behavior for Hoagie.
Okay.
19 years earlier, in 1994, the Hoaglands set off on an adventure. According to that episode of Disappeared I mentioned earlier, the young family moved across the country to California with no money and no jobs, which, you know, is something I don't think I would do with kids, but something I absolutely would have done otherwise. And actually, it wasn't across the country, but I definitely did do that.
Yeah.
I moved to New York City with a duffel bag and $250 and no job. But as you may imagine, once you add kind of kids into that and you're like completely across the country, things didn't exactly go smoothly.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Apparently, it took a long time for Hoagie to find a restaurant job when they moved there, but he finally did. And things seemed to be going well. And according to Lori, one morning, several weeks into his new position, he left home and told her not to wait up. And this wasn't unusual at all because, like, the restaurant where he worked had events. And
okay.
So a lot of times, you know, he had to stay late and help with those. So, you know, he worked odd hours. Like, Lori didn't think anything of it. But Hoagie never came home after work. And Lori soon found out that her husband had been let go from his job 2 days earlier.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So what was he doing?
Well, days turned into weeks with Lori and her small children sitting in their California home wondering where Hoagie had gone.
Mm.
But 3 weeks later, he returned. According to Lori, he told her that he got scared and needed some time away. He felt ashamed that he had lost his job and couldn't face her knowing that he wasn't able to take care of her and their boys. The couple reconciled and soon gave up on their California dreams and moved back east.
So did he say where he had been for those 3 weeks?
I mean, I'm sure he did eventually. But what's interesting about this disappearance that we should talk about is that, you know, there are some similarities to what eventually happens in 2013. Namely, that the day he disappeared back in 94 was a seemingly normal day in which Hoagie was following his standard daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot more differences. Hoagie took the family car, for instance, back in 94. And when he was gone, he also used his credit cards. Mm-hmm. So he was easily tracked. And like, while the family, I'm sure, was worried because they didn't know where he was really, or if he was coming back, they at least knew that he didn't fall off the face of the earth and could reasonably assume that he was safe.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question to me then is, does this prove that he didn't leave on his own because he was so easily found last time and was only gone for 3 weeks? Or does this indicate that he did leave on his own and just did a better job of covering his tracks this time?
I mean, I don't think it says anything one way or the other.
I just think it's really interesting to me that somebody who just disappears one day
had done it before,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you're right. But there's similar circumstances around both instances. You know, mm-hmm. stressed out.
Yeah.
Situations. One, he's lost his job, has, you know, young kids mm-hmm. in the house.
And the other, you know, his son is going through all this drug stuff and he's like confronting guys in abandoned factories. Like,
yeah,
two very stressful times.
Yeah.
So again, is this another coincidence or did he just learn from that?
So you would think, okay, so he's got $600 cash, let's say.
Let's say. Presumably, we don't know.
Yeah. If he doesn't have a planned location of where he's going,
mm-hmm.
you need a credit card to book a hotel room.
Yeah, typically.
Unless you're staying in some really shady places.
Yeah.
But he didn't take his wallet, so there's no credit cards to track.
No credit cards. And yeah, and there was no activity on his credit cards, the bank, like nothing. Unlike in 1994.
Unless he opened a new credit card that nobody knows about.
Mm-hmm. But I would assume they would be checking his social security number, right?
Yeah, that's where I was just going to go.
Exactly.
If it's in his name, if it's under his social.
Like they would have found it at some point. Not right away. Yeah. Maybe not in that first week or two.
Right. But it shows up on a credit report, credit report.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. New credit inquiries. And, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because my thought was that maybe that was what he was hiding. With the search history on the mm-hmm. on his computer, yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, that would have shown up at some point if it was under his name, if it was under his social.
Yeah.
Some evidence that kind of leads to the latter possibility of him, like, just getting better at walking away from his life. In September of 2013, just about 2 months after he was last seen at his Connecticut home, someone reported that they had seen Hoagie in Rhode Island.
Mm.
Now, this sighting was especially interesting to police because, if you remember, they had found all those searches for an address in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
A sighting of a man with a backpack who was walking around Rhode Island Route 117 and I-95. Police immediately investigated, of course, thinking that this very well could be him.
Mm-hmm.
But that man was actually found and identified as somebody else.
Mm.
But another man was sighted by the Rhode Island Department of Transportation. And this man was similar looking and also had a backpack. and he was seen walking along Rhode Island Route 165 near Voluntown, which is close to the Connecticut state line. And authorities couldn't track this man down, so he's never been identified either way.
And how close is that to the address that he was searching? Do we know?
Mm-mm. No, they never really get into that. Yeah. But Rhode Island's a very small state. Yeah. So relatively close.
Sure.
There was also another reported sighting of Hoagie back at a store in Connecticut, but that person was caught on surveillance footage, which aired on Disappeared. And other than being like a bald white guy, this person looks nothing like Hoagie. And you know me, like I cannot tell white men apart to save my life.
Yeah.
But even I was like, that is nowhere near that dude when I saw the footage. Since then, there have been rumors that Hoagie was working as a cook down in Hilton Head, South Carolina, but no solid evidence has ever come out to prove that.
We have these sightings in Rhode Island. One that we
definitely know is not him.
Right. One we definitely know is not him. The other one.
Maybe.
One that could be, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Walking with a backpack. Now, he left without transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, he only has $600 cash. Amtrak runs pretty well through there.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an easy avenue for him to head up north.
Yeah.
Hilton Head, I think that would be harder for him to get to.
I don't know. I mean, I think a bus could get you there, I mean, pretty easily.
Yeah, I guess.
And so here, let's go back to the $600 thing, right? So there's $600 that were unaccounted for that he had withdrawn, like, right before he disappeared.
Yeah.
But let's say he was planning on leaving. I mean,
again, $600 doesn't get you very far.
No, but who says that that's all he had?
Yeah.
Like, we don't count pennies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what if he was taking $20 here, $30 here, $20 there for months?
It could have been that.
He could have just been squirreling cash away.
That's true.
For a while. And if he's just, you know, taking small amounts here and there, like, nobody's going to notice that.
I don't understand what the point of hiding it that well would be. Like, if you're starting a new life and essentially going to disappear, why go through the trouble of doing all that? Why not just take a large sum of money out and just go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, the only thing I can think of is to give himself more of a head start. You know, because, like, you got to think, everybody's kind of figuring out in the first couple weeks, they're like, okay, well, did something happen to him? Did it have something to do with Max? Mm-hmm. Was he a victim of violence? You know, is he on the Appalachian Trail? Like, they're going down all these different avenues, as opposed to if he took, you know, several thousand dollars and left a note that said, all right, peace, I'm out. Like, they would have started just looking for him in that regard immediately.
Yeah, well, I guess for me, the hang-up is that, you know, he had these 17 days where his wife wasn't in town that he mm-hmm. could have left, and he waited until...
Like, right before she came back?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And that is a good point, because that could have given him an even bigger head start.
Exactly.
If that was what he was going for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And that's, like, why this is... I just have no idea on this one. And, you know, when I was researching this case, most of the information came from the first year after he disappeared. At that time, Lori seemed to believe that her husband had been the victim of foul play.
Mm-hmm.
She told the Danbury News Times in 2014 that she believed that he could have upset someone enough to hurt him if he was trying to protect his children. Quote, I've seen him chase people down the street with baseball bats, end quote. So, like,
okay.
I mean, you know, again, I'm going back to him confronting people at an abandoned factory. Like, this guy clearly, when it came to his kids, was willing to put himself in physical danger.
Yeah.
Hoagie's oldest son, Chris, also doesn't believe that his dad just took off, but for a much simpler reason, his shoes. Apparently, his dad loved wearing loafers, like just loafers 24/7. Like that's all he wore, no matter what the weather, no matter what his activity, like he just wore loafers. And both pairs were still at the house after he disappeared.
So what shoes was he wearing then?
I don't know.
We're assuming he has another pair of shoes, right?
I mean, I'm assuming like he has a pair of tennis shoes or something. But yeah, he like didn't take his loafers. And that's why Chris is like, he did not leave of his own volition. Because that man, he might leave his family, but he wouldn't leave his loafers.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said about that.
Right?
But, you know, it's like your theory about the money. If he's planning this out for months ahead of time.
Maybe he bought some new leave-in loafers. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
Yeah. But as the years have gone on and no sign of their beloved Hoagie has ever turned up, not even after that 2016 episode of Disappeared, it seems as though the family may believe he did just decide to walk away. The Find Hoagie Facebook and Twitter accounts have gone dormant. And, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but there's a commenter I found on Reddit who claims to be close friends with Chris, the oldest son. He posted on the Unresolved Mysteries board about this case, quote, "I grew up in Newtown and am quite good friends with his son, Chris, who was on the Disappeared episode. I talked to him after it aired, and he said that his family is almost sure it was voluntary. Very sad. He said he just hopes his dad is happier now, and all he wants is to see him again," end quote.
If he did leave on his own accord. So we said this in the Daniel Ewan case, you know, if you left on your own accord, you know, like we said earlier, it's not illegal, but just make a phone call.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, his kids were all grown adults.
Right.
You know, he and his wife, we didn't really get into this, but they had had marital problems, you know, beyond that, like, 1994 incident where he left for 3 weeks. Like, and they had talked about splitting up. But it's like, everybody's adults here. Like,
right.
If you want to leave, just leave.
Yeah.
But don't let people wonder for it's been over 7 years at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly. Like, again, I don't, if he left on his own accord, why shroud it in mystery?
Right.
Why not, like, just go?
Yes. I mean, what's the point of the cruelty?
Yeah. Of leaving them wondering.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the question we're left with. Can a man buy bagels for his son and then disappear from his life? Or did something far more tragic happen to Robert Hoagland? Either way, he has a family who just wants answers. Robert Hoagie Hoagland has been missing from Newtown, Connecticut since July 28, 2013. He was 50 years old at the time of his disappearance. He was 6 feet tall and 175 pounds. He was balding and had close-cropped hair. He would be 57 years old today. If you have any information about what happened to Robert Hoagie Hoagland or where he might be, please contact the Newtown Police at 203-426-5841. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and video, on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at @ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'd like to hear from you, so you can actually leave us a message at the link in our show notes, and we may play it on a future episode. We will see you right here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.